It'll
you want to do it? You want to? Let's Matt, you
June
do
5th.
It.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
For June 5th, 2006, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
That was awesome. All right, so we're actually all in the same room, which is a rarity. I'm here with... how do we do this again? It's been so long. It's been weeks since we've done like a proper podcast. We had interviews and that the teleconference kind of thing last week. And but let's see if we... I'm Jeff Robbins from Lullabot. And I'm here with...
Matt Westgate.
And...
Ted Srubinski.
Yeah, that's all right.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're doing okay. it's the ever so casual Drupal podcast with the Lullabot team. This week, broadcasting from Ames, Iowa, home of Matt Westgate.
And DrupalCorn.
Yes.
The next Drupal conference.
So, What's been going on? There's been all kinds of stuff going on with Drupal. I committed yet another module that I won't maintain.
Which one is it this time?
This time, it's the Contemplate module, which is short for Content Template. The idea of bringing some sort of templating to CCK, right at the CCK level. Like when you're creating a CCK node type, you can say, I want it to output this way. Was sort of a thing that I thought was needed. And what I realized was that actually this was something that could be used by other node types. I mean, you could actually kind of use it for anything other than CCK as well. So rather than having it be part of CCK, it's actually a separate thing that dovetails well with CCK but isn't necessarily part of CCK. Contemplate modules.
So it's like an online editor. Sort of.
Yeah.
Online template editor.
Well, normally with CCK, I mean, the sort of caveat with CCK is that you don't have a lot of control over how it outputs the stuff. I mean, you can choose the order and stuff like that. And you really need to create template files in order to manipulate it. But the problem is that those template files, which would be like node type. node-nodetype.tpl.php is how you do this with a PHP template. But those files don't override how it outputs to RSS feeds. And so as we were starting to build sites and use CCK on those sites, I was finding that the node feeds were just ugly and had stuff in them that I wanted to use in the theming but didn't necessarily want to have output in the RSS. And so it just was a whole big thing. So this was my... solution, and people should check it out and see what they think and post bugs and issues and patches. Just post your own patches, fix it yourself. And or if you want to take over this or any of Jeff Robbins' modules, contact Jeff Robbins. That's jeff@lullabot.com saying, hey, you're not maintaining this module. I want to take it over. So, because... I'm just horrible about that. I love building modules, but I'm not good that way. So, what else? What have you guys been working on? What's going on? What's new?
Jesus posted an article to Drupal.org about 3 months ago till development closes. Is that right?
2 months. September 1 is the closing date.
So 3 months.
3 months till 4.8, right?
Yes.
Till the 4.8
code
cutoff,
freeze.
Code freeze. So then it's just bug fixes, and then eventually, like a year later, then 4.8 will get released, right?
Possibly.
That's a joke, folks. It should be maybe a month, maybe.
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 1 to 2 months.
We got burned so badly with 4.7 that we're not going to say, but we're not going to do that again with 4.8.
November 20th.
You heard it right here. November 20th is the next release date.
Uh-oh, I gotta go, guys. But so he basically outlined there's been some patches going in, changes things. I think Matt helped work on profile autocomplete patch.
Oh yeah. So when you're creating new profile fields, when you're entering the category for the profiles, you know, like personal information or whatnot, if you've already entered in the category before, it'll autocomplete it for you. So just a minor usability improvement there. But I know Ted's been working on some more drastic changes,
yeah.
Trying to break all themes once again. So you better inform these people what they need to do.
So what happened, this started as an idea, I think, back August 2005, maybe before then. Basically, a problem is theming links in Drupal is kind of a pain. Or was a pain.
Doing anything with links in Drupal. So
yeah.
If,
what
for
kind of
instance...
Links? What are you talking about?
So the hook links. Right.
The links at the bottom of a node, like add new comment, read more, etc. The problem with those links are they're just hard-coded as a string of just A tags, anchor tags. So if you want to change out attributes or change the text or add some JavaScript, you need some fancy regexes to do that, which is a total pain in the butt. I've become a regex expert because of that, or so to speak. So what this new patch that went in accomplished was all the links now are structured as an array, so you can have, if you want to change the read more link and add a class or add a JavaScript class or attribute or just get rid of it, there is a links array, so you can go to links node-readmore. You can bring up that link and you have all the attributes like where it points to, the classes on it, the title. So it's really easy to change things in and out. And also, related to that, there's a new hook link alter. So other modules can basically interact with other modules' hook links and alter them. Pretty much the same way form alter works, but a lot simpler.
So, for instance, it would be relatively easy to have a little picture of a talk bubble next to your add comments link,
right,
and a little picture of a, I don't know, page next to your read more.
Exactly. And
things like that. I mean, that's the easy stuff, but then obviously with the link alter stuff, it gets crazy.
Certainly. And one little, I guess, little helpful thing that was put in the patch is all links that are generated automatically have an associated class generated with them. So node read more, there's a class node read more. Add new comment class. So for themers, you don't have to do anything. You can just go in and set a.nodeReadMore, give it an image icon, a.addNewComment. So it's really easy to add icons now without hacking anything.
Now, is it finally accessible, standards compliant? Is it actually a list that gets output now?
Soon to be. There's another patch on the queue. If you guys go look through the issue queue, I don't know what the node number is. But the next part of the patch is I want to have hook link output an actual list. So it'll be, instead of it being just a big string, it'll be a list of menu items. And then I've updated all the CSS, so everything looks almost exactly the same, but everything's being output semantically correct.
So semantically, because it's a list of links,
right?
It would be a UL tag rather than
exactly
the current piped kind of thing that it sort of defaults to now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Right on. What else is going on? There's been some other crazy stuff that people are talking about, at least, right?
Adrian and, with the help of Vlado, are up at it again to break everything. But this time, hopefully, it doesn't appear to be as bad. What they have going on in the Bright's SVN repository is there's a new theming patch that's almost ready to start being more thoroughly tested. I looked at the code today. The basic synopsis of this is all the modules are going into their own directory. Theming functions are completely gone now, and they're replaced by corresponding TPL files, which makes it really easy for designers to kind of just copy the file and change as needed without having to worry about the PHP so much. And as a result of that, it should be a performance boost for Drupal and a memory boost as well, because there'll be less content for Drupal to parse, which should overall make things a little bit better and faster. This is just all theoretical. We don't know for sure. But it looks like it's going in the right direction, and hope to play with that code later tonight.
Yeah, I just did an interview with Carolee Nagisi, who actually shows us how to pronounce his name properly, or at least that just says it's okay to call him Charlie. And he talked about that a whole bunch. So we'll actually have that at the end of this. So stay tuned for that. So that's really cool stuff, too. And hopefully it won't break things too bad.
I don't think it'll be too bad. It'll break themes a little bit, but I don't think it'll affect too many things. Depending, if you have a theme that's overridden a ton of theme functions, you might have to change things around. But for the most part, I think it'll be somewhat smooth compared to Forms API.
and it's going to be so much easier to explain to designers how to hook into this stuff, or
right,
how to make changes to the structure, to the HTML structure of a Drupal site. You know, I mean, it's one thing to tell them, well, what you can do is you can go into the code, and if you find any function with theme underscore, you can change that by, you know.
Right, and the part where they go blank is as soon as you say, and you can go into the code, and then it's over. Then it's
completely
all off.
So now, you know, go find the template file,
copy it over, and
copy it, paste it into your theme directory, and start hacking on it.
Basically,
so much
right,
easier.
And those files will actually will be more like the PHP template files,
right,
that people are used to. So they're actually more HTML like than PHP like.
Exactly.
That's cool stuff.
And the other cool thing is this opens up the door for a Drupal theme editor built into the whole system. So if familiar with movable type, you can basically edit all the templates on the site. Once all these template files are moved out, it'll be very easy to build an editor that looks at all these template files and allows you to edit them and save them. And it'll tell you what files you've changed and what you haven't. And this would be a fairly minimal amount of code to make a very cool feature.
Wow. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So sort of movable type-like in that,
right,
you can edit your template files actually in a text area,
yep,
on your... Oh, that's very cool. So you wouldn't even need to to tell the people, the design people, that's good stuff, man.
So now all we need, once we have that in the text areas, is syntax highlighting for text areas. I don't think that's Drupal's responsibility, but that would sure be nice to see.
Yeah, we'll have to talk to the Moxie Code people about that. We could do like a tiny MCE kind of like
a JavaScript syntax highlighter overlay.
That'd be awesome. Well, there's some really cool Summer of Code projects going on that are sort of. There's one that's kind of related to that. There's one that's basically like Sub-Etha Edit, a collaborative editor kind of thing where multiple people can edit the same thing at the same time using Ajax and stuff. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, Angie talked about that. Webchick talked about that a little bit in that. In that teleconference. So that should be really cool stuff. I mean, a lot of these things are sort of like, it'd be amazing if they happened. So that'd be really great. I would use that. We'd use that for the podcast. We'd say,
yeah,
hey,
sure.
You know, change the little things that we're going to talk about and stuff.
I'm actually a mentor on that project. And he's using Comet technology instead of Ajax technology,
to the next level.
Yeah, synchronous burst transfers.
Oh, that stuff is really neat.
Yeah.
Because the problem with Ajax, sort of the way it works, right, is that it just keeps needing to hit the server, and say, like, every 2 seconds, it's like, you got any updates? And that's difficult on the server. And so the thing with the Comet stuff, conceptually speaking, is that it actually is able to push stuff out. Remember push technology, that back from the 90s?
Yeah.
Push. We're going to push it to your desktop. Oh, great. Thanks.
Yeah, we're all mentoring projects, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you mentoring, Ted?
I am mentoring a student, Scott Reynolds, which is working on a content recommendation system. Basically, how it works is it's based on voting API, so it's not going to recommend content based on just similar content part of the node. It'll base it on, like, if I say I, like, vote nodes, like, 5 through 8, and you vote something, it'll say, well, someone viewing the site, it's like most likely based on how people usually vote and how you vote in the past, you're going to like these kind of nodes which have these kind of ratings. So it's really cool. It's based on this slope one algorithm, which is, it's written really well. It performs dynamically on the fly. And for as simple and as fast as it is, it's very, very accurate. So it's shaping up really well, and can't wait to start playing around with it soon.
Cool. And Ned Joe Rogers and I are mentoring a student named Avi Mehta, who lives in India. And he is building an Ajax-based form builder, kind of a module. So we're still kind of figuring out exactly what it'll do and how it'll do it, and what's a reasonable amount to make it do. But ultimately, I mean, it could do things like allow you to just, you know, basically be like a graphical interface for form alter. So you'd mm-hmm. be able to rearrange forms on your site or add things in or wow. take things out and stuff like that. But at its base, it would just make it a whole lot easier to create forms for Drupal that Certainly. Would output these, the sort of complex arrays that are often needed. So,
cool.
Could encourage people to make, you know, having tools like this will really, I think, improve the Drupal user interface by having people be able to use check boxes when they, you know, it's like, oh, I would put that in there, but it's a hassle. I can't kind of figure it's a complex right. array thing and stuff like that. So it'll be really cool, kind of drag and drop form stuff. We'll see how it's coming together, but I'm really excited about it. And Nejo's does great work, and the Avi seems to really know his stuff, so we're excited about
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. I forgot to mention that the student that's working on the synchronous editing engine is Ernest Delgado. So just a name drop out to him. You kick it, man.
Yeah. Yo, Ernest. Yeah. there's been also some other interesting news. Dries has been posting some really interesting statistics on his site and some stuff like that. Either you guys want to talk about that a little bit? anybody want to kick some statistics out? I don't have them in front of me.
I can crank some out. So I think it was yesterday where it's been exactly 1 month since Drupal 4.7 was released. And so Dries went in and crunched some numbers, and there's been nearly 50,000 downloads of Drupal 4.7 in the past 30 or 31 days, which is, I don't know, 1,200 downloads a day, roughly, that. I mean, that's crazy. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Also, the Lullabot team did a series of Drupal 4.7 video casts to promote how to install, what's new, and how to upgrade to Drupal 4.7. And since that time, there's been over 25,000, those videos have been viewed over 25,000 times, which is quite a bit. It added an additional 400 gigs of traffic to the to the servers. So, you know, the shout goes out to the Oregon Open Source Labs people for letting us host the videos there, because I know that can be quite wear and tear on the servers. But I think it's going great. I think people are getting a lot of benefit from the videos, and, you know.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback. I mean, it really kind of gears us on to do more of that kind of stuff. Actually, I should mention, I did a video cast, I think. I forgot to mention that. It's on lullabot.com/podcast. You can see this is sort of the audio cast section and the video cast, but it's all there. The video cast I did for Actions and Workflows, because mm-hmm. I set up a mailing list, which you can sign up for on lullabot.com. To automatically have the option when you create a node, there's a workflow, and you can set the workflow to the sent state, and it will send out the node as an email to everyone on the mailing list. And so it's a really great way when we put up a podcast, when we put up this podcast, we can let everybody on the mailing list know, hey, there's a new podcast, come and get it. Mm-hmm. We put up articles, same kind of thing, you know. So that right there, that's push technology, my friend.
With no custom programming.
Right? Yeah, no custom programming. So it's kind of neat to do. I use the screen capture program, and it follows my mouse around. It's kind of, it makes you a little dizzy, so, you know, don't eat right before you watch it, but, you know, all the information's there. We're still working out our technologies, but, yeah, I made a few people seasick with that. So. Just a little of the value-added excitement you get at Lullabot.com. I should also mention we've got workshops, right?
Yeah.
That we're doing in D.C., they got kind of moved around due to about 18 different reasons, and now they're in August. August 7th and 8th is the Drupal 101 class, and August 9th and 10th. August 7th and 8th is Drupal 101. August 9th and 10th is the theming Drupal class workshops. DC. If you go to lullabot.com/training, there's more information about that and signing up. And if you sign up before July 1st, $100 off for everybody. So, yeah.
And these are going to rock, people.
Yeah.
We've got Ted here. What more do you need? You know? I mean, he changed his middle name to Drupal. That's how dedicated he is.
So we're gonna kind of crack open a lot of the projects that we've been working on and basically show you what's inside. So should be really good stuff. Drupal 101, you know, obviously, well, it's not obvious. We're going to talk about what Drupal does and how it does it and what you can do for Drupal and what Drupal can do for you. And then theming Drupal will get a lot more into sort of manipulating the theming layer in Drupal and knocking it into place.
Making your site look kick-ass.
Making your site kick-ass. That's right. So, well, that kind of sums it up. You know, that's kind of the latest news from Lullabot. And we're going to do right now an interview with Charlie, CHX, Carolee. The man goes by many names, but he's one man with the power of 20. And here he is. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Have a good week.
Let's start by figuring out how to pronounce your name.
Well, I think the simplest is to just call me Charlie, because this is the translation of my name. Actually, my name is Károly Négyesi, but I have never met any English speaker who could pronounce that.
and you're Hungarian, correct?
Yes.
And Hungary is the surname first?
I have used the English order. So Károly is a translation of Charlie.
Right.
Actually.
Right.
If you look at it, it's pretty close even. Close than from the Latin one.
Uh-huh. And so...
Károly, Carl, Carlos, Charlie, all the same.
But online and on Drupal, it's CHX.
Yes. You know, it also comes from Charlie. The secret is that when I got my first internet account in 93, they asked what should be the account name. I said CH for the two letters of Charlie. And they said, no, there should be three letters at least. And I simply said X. You know, that's a kind of a slang for I don't care in Hungarian. But they took it literally. So that's how it began.
That's funny.
And then I spent quite a lot online, so it stick.
So people call you CHX, people call you Carolee, and people call you Charlie, and it's all you.
saw me. Yes, yes, yes.
So,
and people call me other names, but that's better not discussed.
So, tell me more about yourself and where you live and how you got connected with Drupal.
Yep. So, I live in the capital of Hungary. It's called Budapest. It's a 2 million city. It's a pretty busy city. Now we are members of the European Union. Things are looking pretty good. And, well, that's most about my environment. For about myself, I was always into maths and programming. I learned first programming in BASIC. That was more than 20 years ago, in 85, when I was 10 years old. I had a very simple 8-bit machine. Probably the Europeans will remember the Sinclair Spectrum. The Americans probably won't, because it was not really popular there. It was much like the Tandy TRS. It was the same level, the Commodore 64, so that kind of thing. And then I learned BASIC, Pascal, assembly, Prolog, C, C++. So when PHP came, I can't even tell you when I learned PHP. After you know C, you do not learn PHP, you just do it. It's almost trivial, you know?
Yeah.
I was, during the university, I was writing technical articles for the biggest Hungarian computer magazine. After that, I was doing some stuff for a Hungarian portal, but when the dot-com bubble went out, it also went out here about 1.5 years later, and so this portal was gone, and I had nothing to do. So with one of my friends who was in the same shoe, we began to do some search engine optimization business, and this led to, we needed to recode a horrible broken website. After some time, this led to, we needed a CMS. We could not do any more with custom coding. I think this is kind of natural evolution. So this was the beginning of 2004. We looked at everything we could found, the various nukes, Mambo, TikiWiki, well, even Typo 3. I thought I would quit computing and go gardening when I saw Type 3. But on May 29, I heard Goba talking about Drupal. And during that talk, I sent a short text message to my friend that we have our CMS. This is, I think, quite important. Just what he was saying about Drupal was enough for me to be affirmative that this is what I have thought of. The most important for me about Drupal was that its code is clean, it's very small, and it's very extensible. I am working along these since then. Because on that day I joined Drupal.org, started to explore Drupal, started to code Drupal. A few months later, I even had 3 lines of code in core. Whoa! For just before 4.5 was released. You can't imagine how happy I was for 3 lines of code. Well, a bit later, I had a little bit more than 3 lines in core.
It's really hard to get those 3 lines into code, into core.
Yes, yes. It was not easy. But things began to be really intensive after next February, when we had the first DrupalCon. When we met in Antwerp, I met some real great people, and things really went skyrocket from then. I got various smaller jobs, some bigger ones. Now I work for NowPublic as their developer team lead. I also, well, as my profile says, I do a patch or two for Drupal Core about every day.
Yeah, that's about right.
I happen to lead the security team. I actually asked Dreesh to set that up. I didn't really want... I think when I told Dreesh back in Antwerp that we should have one, I didn't think I was the one who will lead it. I just told him that we need something. You know? We had...
You need people to think about security in Drupal. Yeah, certainly.
Yes. But it seems that, well, the security team is working somewhat. Things are looking pretty good. It's I think we are pretty good on the security lines. We do not have too serious problems. Maybe it looks like an understatement, because just this year we already had 8 security announcements. But, you know, there never was a worm that could attack, that could really attack Drupal because of a Drupal fault.
Right.
And I think this is just what's important. Of course, this is partly because you just can't Google the Drupal sites, because we do not have a power by Drupal on every Drupal site.
Right.
But also because our code, I think, yes, it's pretty secure.
Right.
It's pretty secure despite the small glitches. It's
so the security problems that you found, that have been found by the security team, were they sort of theoretical problems, like, or were they actually people getting attacked and here's what they did?
We had the luck that mostly they were reported by honest people who didn't attack anyone. So we never had a problem like, oh, my site got hacked, and I do not know what happened, and we discovered a sucker coming from that. This never happened so far. I think this has something to do with the technicality of our community. Mm-hmm. If you look at the graphs Dreesh published today or yesterday, you can see that in January, 30% of Drupal downloads was the Drupal 4.7 beta. I do remember the state of 4.7 in January, and I dare to say that we surely have highly technical community if people dared to use that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about getting 4.7 out and the role that you played in that. You probably more than any other person in the Drupal community were responsible for pushing things through and reminding people every day that they needed to be working on patches and fixing bugs and that kind of thing. And it was really...
Well, yes. I was more like pushing for reviewing. You know, because we have enough coders. Coding is easy. If someone finds a bug, it's very easy to fix. usually.
Right.
The big problem is finding that bug and reviewing the patch. It's not, at least for me, writing a patch is nothing almost. But reviewing it, that it really fixes the problem. Does it cause other problems? This is why I always push for reviews and more reviews.
So let's talk about that. How does a person, if someone's listening to this podcast and they think, I'm a programmer, I would love to help out, but how do I review a patch? What is the process of let's talk about the whole thing. I mean, what's the process of once someone finds a bug, how do they report the bug, and how do people create patches? And more importantly, I guess probably the most important thing is how do people test out these patches and review them and okay them so that...
You know, this whole thing is very, very detailed, documented in the handbook. If you want, I can read it out, but it's really it's painstakingly detailed. How do you do a CVS checkout? The actual commands are there. The node ID is 320. And then we have a very good page about this and patch. That page tells you how do you create a patch, how do you apply a patch. Even if you are under Windows, I'm telling all users, yes, you can do it on Windows. It's, there are several utilities for that. Actually, for example, Tortoise is a much better CVS client than anything on Unix. This is the only program, this CVS client is the only program I miss on Linux. It was so very convenient on Windows. Right. Or you could use command line tools because they are ported, or you could use Segwin, which is a whole Unix environment under Windows. So it's possible. It's not even hard. So you'll have a CVS checkout. You know how to apply a patch, and then you just try to do things with Drupal. And how do you report? Well, you report with the version of Drupal you tested, the PHP version you tested with, the MySQL version you tested with. If these seem relevant, there are some things when this is not relevant, but most of the time this doesn't hurt if you give us a detailed description. And if you report a bug, then you describe what have I done, what have I expected, what happened instead. This is pretty straightforward, and yet people just sometimes give so strange bug reports that they do not describe what they did with Drupal. They describe what they wanted to do with Drupal without writing the exact steps that I went to administer, click settings, and so a white screen, for example.
Right.
No, they say, I wanted the mission to be this and that, and I got a white screen. And I say, oh my God, and where did you got that? What should I do with this? You know, stuff like that. There are thousands of bug reports of that, literally. It's amazing. How do you people think that we will find out what's in their mind and what's in their computers? You really should give us details.
A lot of that, I mean, is just sort of figuring out the process, and people get better at it over time. And hopefully they'll listen to the podcast and, I mean, get some guidelines for how to do that, and they can be helpful. Very, very be as detailed as possible in submitting bug reports and testing and all that kind of stuff, because Drupal continues to get bigger and bigger, and it's harder and harder for one person or two people to keep track of what's going on everywhere. So,
yeah, for sure. And also, so this was the reporting phase, but But this is really in the handbook. Also, in the handbook, you can find a very fine page about how to review a patch. That page, if I remember correctly, was originally written by Steven, then got enhanced by Morsh and me. The page is now really looks good, and it really tells you everything that you should know. As I tell you, the whole thing is in the handbook. Maybe we should create a page. I will talk with Sepak about this, that we should create a page which links these together. So these are the steps. Because probably this is the only one that's missing. To see that the process.
Right. So let's move on. So what are you working on these days? I mean, what's exciting for you? You were on the teleconference last week, and we had some technical problems. So here's your chance to kind of catch up with that.
As I told you, one of the most important things for Drupal is extensibility. The next step is CCK. But CCK is so big a step that it just couldn't be done in one release. Also, it's possible that it will never make into core, because CCK is big. It's a huge thing. What we are doing currently is that some parts of it get into core, namely that you could create any number of page story like nodes. These are nodes that have a body, have a title, and nothing else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this patch is actually done, and I would be very happy if people would review it, because aside from Gish, almost no one reviews it, despite it's one of the most important patches for 4.8. This is the first step for CCK, because when these node types are there, then CCK can add its field to these node types. So CCK will change, I think. Currently, it's a node module. It will change into a node API module.
Right.
I already talked with Jumbob about this, and he is quite okay with this. This is not a particularly harsh process to do.
Right.
To change it, actually, and it will be really tightly coupled with the core. This is the most important thing I'm currently working on. Also, if you remember how Form API was born, we were converting Form API in Bright SVN, and I do not know what they think now when I say that once again I am working with Adrian in Bright SVN on some things.
So for people that don't know about, let's do a little quick history on this. So there was a code freeze on Drupal 4.7 in September of last year, and there
that was
just
announced the code freeze didn't happen.
Right, the code freeze, exactly. And there was one last feature that was going to get into Drupal for 4.7, and that was the new Form API, which then became a whole big thing. It basically broke everything, and it held up the testing and security issues and all that kind of stuff, held up the Drupal release of 4.7. Along with other things. I mean, there were a lot of other things, and there were a lot of people doing a lot of different things in the community. And
yes, but Form API, you know,
but Form API
like
was sort of the major thing, and Carol Lee was was probably it was Adrian Rousseau from Bright and Carol Lee who were the major players with the Form API stuff. And
well, Adrian found this thing out. He has written the whole thing. He introduced the patch at the end of August. And then Vish said, okay, get this into core, people get together, convert core into Form API, then we freeze core, I give you two more weeks. And then, only a short time later, it was only 8 months later, and we were done.
Yeah.
Well, it was quite a ride, I tell you. And sorry for being so late with 4.7. Looking back, it was something that's called a dollar bidding. It was too much invested to quit.
Right.
Probably we should have released without Form API, but it was always so very close. There is just a few right. more bugs to fix, right. and then we can do it.
Right.
Damn. Well, yes, probably by now, I have more code in Form Inc. than Adrian himself. There, it changed a real lot. Well, currently, Adrian and Vlado Dikin is working on some real interesting stuff, which includes moving modules into their own directories and moving the teams into their own files and some other theme-related stuff.
So each module will be in its own directory, and its theme functions, which in the past have lived inside the module, the dot module file, will now actually be outside of that module, but in the directory for that module. And so the idea, one of the ideas, there's several improvements that this brings, but one of the things is that it allows themers to basically just move these theme files, copy them, theme files from the module directory into their theme directory, and then edit them and change them. And so they don't have to find the function and copy the function and all that kind of thing. But it's, of course, a larger thing than that. Because
yes, Adrian has shown me a dozen line module which implemented a browser-based theme editor.
Wow.
It was quite amazing, I tell you. But, you know, this is Adrian. I am not even surprised. I am not even surprised. So they are working on this, and this time it won't break too many things because the code is already there. The code is already there. One of the last things that got into 4.7 was something that dealt with the problem when you move a module from one directory to another. So the code is already there. The code is even in 4.7, so the mere moving of modules into their own directories won't break anything.
Oh, that's really nice, because that was a problem, that if you wanted to reorganize your module directory and that kind of thing, you had to sort of turn them all off.
But someone sneaked in that bug fix. I do not even remember who did it, but someone did it. It was it's really nice that it happened. So this won't break things. The team stuff will certainly break a little, but not too much. Not too much. There is not that big amount of new things there. What I plan to do is, based on these, to do a little splitting. Some people might remember that I wanted to do a very radical splitting in the past, which involved every function in their own file but I admit that's too radical. But now I think it, that I would like to see modules split it into two parts or maybe three. I will see one, a view part. That's necessary, you know, to view nodes, comments, add a comment, log in, and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
The odd, this is, if you think of it, this is just a little code. Very little code is involved in this. The other part is for stuff like edit a node, edit a user, administer your site, all those forms, all those processing. I would like to see that moved into an include file, which gets included on demand. This, in my hopes, will result in a much faster Drupal. Because all web applications are read heavy. And it's not too hard, you know, it's a very rare thing to edit something. It's really rare.
Right.
But currently, we load every form that you never use for each and every non-cached view. We load a ton of code. And it's well known amongst developers that the loading and parsing of code is the biggest performance problem for Drupal. Even that we have a very lean core, even with this, most time is spent in Drupal load. If someone needs exact figures, contact Moshe. He has the profiling data.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, just to recap that. So you basically, when you go to load a Drupal page, if it doesn't need the forms, if you're not editing anything, if all you're doing is just viewing a Drupal page, all that will be loaded right now, what happens is it loads in all of Drupal and it has to parse through all of Drupal and there's a whole lot of functions that aren't being used. And so the idea is to basically just load just the files, just the information, the PHP boot that's needed for that specific viewing. And so things would run a lot faster, and we could get some performance improvements. Not that things are performing, you know, we don't mean to give people the idea that things are performing badly now, but we can always do better. So
we can always do better. It's always possible to do better stuff. Currently, another thing I would like to see is Bootstrap Inc. sliced up. There are some things, most importantly, the cache interface that I think should be in another include. And we should make it possible for people to replace that, because people want to use Memcached.
Right.
People may want to use BerkeleyDB. I have not seen much demand for BerkeleyDB, most probably because people do not know how damn fast that is. One of my Summer of Code students have benchmarked it, and you can't believe how fast it is for this kind of stuff. Third, we already have the file caching patch, and I think the simplest way to do this would be to create a pluggable cache mechanism. So you will have separate cache include files, and you can use whatever you want.
Right.
Because the database caching is not always the best solution.
Right. Yeah, certainly.
Yes. Another thing is I would like to do a new notation for Form API. I really hope it won't break too many things, because it will be a scripted change. It will change almost all lines in Drupal, but it will be scripted, and I truly hope it won't break stuff. So, Well, you know.
So what's that? You're going to make? Did you say you're going to make Form API easier to use? Is that what you just said?
Yes, it will be another notation, a simpler notation, without all those hash marks.
Ah.
It's a simple notation. Gerhard doesn't like it. Drish is neutral about it. But Adrian loves it, you know?
Well, yeah.
I love it.
All the smart people love it.
No, I haven't said that. I just said that it will be very controversial. So I'm not sure whether it will happen or not. 4.8 will be... It will be great. That's for sure. We already have this link, this new link mechanism where you can alter links. We already have low visibility by role and stuff like that. Drish has posted on the homepage a few days back a summary where we are now. We only have a few months, so most probably huge things won't happen with this release, but even just small things will be just great about this release. You know, Form API made it possible to do things that were just not possible before.
Yeah.
We can... So 4.7 is something you can build on, and 4.8 will be the thing that built on 4.7.
Right.
If we made it possible, and now we are... This will be the reef. The re-release somehow. It will be done real fast. Neil Drum is the release manager. He set a very hard release date on September 1. No matter what do you introduce on August 23, even if it's so great that was Form API, no way. We won't do this once again. No one wants to do it. Not even I. Despite I was really into Form API, but never again this. No way. If someone wants to, here is a message to everyone. If you want to rewrite Drupal Core, do it on the day when a release happens. So we have 6 months to fix it up, because it seems that we sometimes need 6 months to fix one patch. This was quite a patch, you know?
It was a huge patch. And still, I mean, I'm still learning about the Form API and the different things that you can do with it and stuff like that. So, more people will understand it more and be able to explain it to other people and stuff as it's going along. But it's very, very, very powerful form stuff. And now that stuff, as you said, is starting to sort of seep into the theming layer and, it's really cool stuff. I mean, already the patches that have gotten into 4.8 are really neat. The new links stuff and the theming stuff is starting to change already and stuff like that. It's going to be really make it a lot more powerful for themers and we'll get some more beautiful Drupal sites, or at least beautiful Drupal sites that are easier to make, hopefully.
Yes, and here is something about Forms API. If you do not find something in the reference, but figure it out, then please change the reference. It's not a sacred code. It lives in contrib CVS. Anyone can change it. If you do not have a CVS account, mirror the documentation list. I am on the list. Vertic is on the list. One of us will certainly roll the changes into the reference. Please do it. The reference is a magnificent work from WebGIC, and surely it can be enhanced even more, but I can't do it anymore because I understand the whole thing. Right. More, probably because I have written half of it.
Yeah.
So if you find something out that was not clear, then please, please help us improve, because I am the first to admit that Form API is not always easy as especially for those who did a lot of stuff with Drupal in the past, because it's really different. It's really, really different.
Right. Right. Well, cool. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about? Are there other things that are on your mind?
I would like to thank everyone for welcoming me in the community, for being with me. It's really great to be part of Drupal.
And it's been almost exactly 2 years since you joined up, right?
Yes, I said that it was May 29. I got so many from the community. I got programming knowledge. I got emotional support. Here I should thank especially Silent Pajamas for her support of me. I get a lot of wisdom from Drish. Not just code, but about how to lead people, and this is really valuable. And all you guys are really great. It's really good to be part of the community again.
Well, I mean, obviously you've brought so much in and done so much work, and it's important that you know that it's really appreciated, and it's great, and you're always on IRC.
Is on IRC because I never switch off my machine, and because I do not really have a 24-hour cycle. Well, mostly nowadays I have, but still not really. So yes, it looks like as if I would be always online, even if it's not so.
Yes. Well, I'm going to attempt it. Caroline Nagisi. It's been a pleasure. No. And I will just call you Charlie and not embarrass myself by trying to pronounce your name anymore.
Yes.
Well, super. Well, thanks so much for talking to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for the interview. Thank you very much for
Take
the
care.
Opportunity.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.